This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to
94.9
FM.
2, 3, 4. Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, break it, turn it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Technogaze, the first episode of Technogaze for the year 2014. How long will it take us to start get used to writing that those two numbers down, right?
Well, I was told that, you know, I shouldn't be writing it down, I should be typing it into my computer, and the computer should be doing it for me.
Spoken like a true nerd.
Isn't the old gag that you always used to write it on your checks? Like, I'm going to keep writing 2014
yes.
on all my checks.
Checks? Oh. What's a check?
I haven't written a check in years.
You have to sometimes type it into your banking system, though, to say when it was... your transaction should take place, I guess.
When you want a future data transaction.
I never want to do that. I always want to do it right now.
Yeah.
How weird.
That's spoken like a true Gen Y-er.
That's because I'm behind and I'm late.
This is Technogaze, where we talk about all the latest in technology, gadgets, consumer electronics,
the internet,
various other things.
Tinfoil
will play a mention today. Absolutely. Because I'm here.
Is this a cooking show?
Yes. Voices that you've heard so far are the voices that will be with you throughout the entire show, one of whom is myself, Mark.
Hello.
Hello. And that is Raina.
Hi.
We're just going to say hello to each other.
And I'm Michael.
Oh, hi, Michael.
Hi, Mark. Pleased to meet you. Raina, hello.
What up?
What a great start to the year. Now, some of the stuff that we've got in store for you today, we just mentioned it before at the end of Saturday Magazine. Of course, thank you to Pete, who helped out with the show, and of course, all the others, Shannon and everyone else who worked with Saturday Magazine this morning, putting it all together. It's a collaborative effort most of the time. And of course, Shane for doing the news just now. For the show today, Technogaze will be talking a bit about security and Der Spiegel, which is a publication of the German Variety.
German Variety. A German newspaper.
They have released more information about from the leaked documents from Snowden and the NSA. And there's a guy by the name of Jacob Applebaum who's done a talk on, basically summarising the information that can be gleaned from those leaks. So we'll talk a bit about that. Closer to home, we've seen an interesting article from The Conversation as a roundup of Australian website privacy and assessing their readiness against the Australian government's new privacy principles planned for March this year. Snapchat have had a breach, not unlike a lot of other companies that seem to be their account details, passwords and so forth are being leaked out and onto the internet, and Snapchat's the latest victim of that.
That's right.
Is it a rite of passage to be breached these days, that you're not a real, you know, company unless somebody hacks into you?
Well, yes. I suspect the attempted hacking is a good badge to have, but actually being breached is not so good.
I bet there are a lot of young security experts who are cutting their teeth on security breaches like this, companies like that.
Quite likely. In happier news, an entrepreneur, let's just try and get my mouth to work, based in San Francisco. Stop it.
She's doing some great work, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
15,000 people apparently lifted above the poverty line because of her work to cross borders and to bring work to new places.
Hmm.
Awesome.
And if you're concerned about your own privacy, well, later on in the show, we're going to have a bit of an summary of a proposal that's been put forward. It's the carrier pigeon meme, which has made its way, you know, out to the internet a few times over the past decade or two. This time, it's how to solve privacy via carrier pigeon. So, how internet privacy can be implemented by sending data via pigeon.
I'm skeptical, but I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
I can imagine the data intercepts with a shotgun.
Or a cat.
Or a cat.
A highly trained cat.
The ping response is perhaps is both slow and unreliable. So
we'll have a chance to talk more about some of that later, I think.
Yes. But without any further ado, now, Michael, I think you're on your hands on for choosing of which.
What? Leading
which,
story?
That's right,
have.
Leading story. Which one?
Well, this is our own form of chat roulette where we spin a wheel and we choose a story at random.
I need that roulette sound effect, don't I?
You do. Yes. Printing, 3D printing.
Oh, surprise!
We are finally going to talk about 3D printing. First story, first up for 2014. Because 2014 is going to be the year of the 3D printer.
Mm, yes.
Isn't that what we said last year?
Yeah, we said 2014 would be the year that 3D printing. You're right. We are nothing but consistent. No, we never spoke about 3D printing last year because Mark keeps on bumping it down to the end of the
list.
No,
I don't bump it down. It just happens to not be high.
This is not a sore point with me. Don't worry.
No.
I won't.
Yes. Awesome box that you brought in today to Joy.
A bit of show and tell.
A bit of show and tell, a 3D printer. Yeah.
I want to see it working.
Actually, that's what we should do. Is we should take a short video of it working and put it up on our website.
Yes.
That would be pretty spectacular.
Yeah, we will do that at some stage.
Twine that crap.
But what's going on with this 3D printing?
Well, this is yet another use of 3D printing, and it's to help you when you lose your keys.
I do that.
Often. Yes. It's expensive.
Often enough.
Often enough to be annoying.
You know what? I say that. I've only done it a couple of times, but whenever I've done it, it's been at the worst possible time.
Yeah, that's Murphy for you.
Mm.
Anyway, this 3D printing app allows you to take a photo of your key,
mm-hmm.
and if you lose your key, you can send it to one of the special 3D printing places who will then cut a key from it or make a 3D key out of the mm-hmm. photographic image and have it couriered to you within something like an hour.
Wow.
I think you have to live in New York City at the moment to have this done.
That'd be right. Yeah.
Where you've got the density of population.
Are they going to send it to you via a drone?
That would be pretty sweet.
And just this drone comes out of the sky and drops a key onto you.
Yeah.
Hopefully does it do facial recognition? You have to look up to the drone. That was me looking up. Just
no, where well-trained pigeons will be able to spot faces. And you'll have good things dropping out of pigeons and not bad things.
So, I mean, last time I had to get a locksmith out, and he had to do quite a lot of hard work on the door. It was close to $500.
Wow.
Because it was late at night. He couldn't just, you know, replace the lock. He actually had to give it a good hard drilling and so on. So it was, you know, it all added up to quite a lot. But imagine if I'd just been able to say, hey, can you print me up a key?
Yeah, and I think they're looking at something around $60 for the service, which isn't bad.
I mean, they're still not chump change, but it's better than
$500 or $300.
Mm.
I don't know how they're going to address the security aspects, because if I see, you know, for instance, around your key lying there, I could quite easily take a photo of it.
That's right.
And send it off and have it cut.
Ah, yes. And the security of those images as well. Whether, you know, do you trust the...
That's right.
The locksmith, the virtual locksmith.
Well, these images are going to be kept in the cloud by this KeyMe service, is what they're called. So,
right. In the cloud.
In the cloud, where, of course, nothing bad ever happens, as we were just discussing.
No.
Imagine if 3 million people's keys and
got
home addresses were scooped up by some enterprising young blackhatter.
Well, yeah, would you store it would be a massive data haul if you did store the addresses of said keys in the same location. Surely that'd be some sort of, you know, inbuilt design to ensure that it's not... I don't know.
How?
I don't know.
That's the thing.
Yeah. What? It's very location based, isn't it?
Keys. Yeah. But it's, look, I think it's a good use of the technology, and if you can overcome the security aspects of it, you know, it's great.
Sure. And I mean, imagine if you're, say you go into state or something like that, and you miss your flight and you've really got to feed your cat or something. Imagine being able to tell a mate, hey, go to 7-Eleven, which is where some of these stands are going to be set up eventually.
Yep.
Or, you know, wait around here for my magical drone or whatever it is.
Yep.
A key will appear and let yourself in and feed my cat and, you know, I'll see you tomorrow.
There is another alternative, having electronic locks that you can release remotely.
Well, that's...
I'm not going to feed my cat.
No, but it will let your mate into the house.
You need an electronic cat feeder then.
Oh,
or you can, or an electronic cat.
That you don't have to feed. I could just get a Roomba. That'd solve all my problems. No cat hair.
Because if you go away for a few days, you just quiesce the cat.
Oh.
Oh, bless.
No?
No, I like my cat.
I am a cat lover, aren't I?
Oh.
You can tell.
Yes, but no.
So that's happening right now, apparently. So pretty exciting.
Mm. Right. Well, bring it on. Now all it needs to do is, you know, become worldwide, and then we're set.
That's right.
Yep.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. If you want to contact us while we're in the studio here at Joy, you can do so by SMSing us 0427 Joy 949. You can also email us.
Oh,
on air at joy.org.au.
You sure can.
And what other ways do you have to...
You can give us a ring on 1300-JOY-949.
And we'll take a message.
Excellent. And we're all social networked up as well, so if you want to tweet us, you can tweet us at Technogaze, TechnoGaze.
Mm-mm.
We'll be back with more technology news in a few moments.
Technogaze. Joy 94.9.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9, and we're covering some of the latest in technology news, and welcome to 2014.
Wow.
It's a new year, new beginnings.
Lots of new toys in the Boxing Day sales.
Oh, yes.
Actually, I've been pretty good.
Really? Actually, talking about new toys, starting next week in Las Vegas is the Consumer Electronics Show.
Of course.
And there are going to be lots and lots of new toys coming out of that.
Yes.
So next week I think we could have a little toy fest.
I reckon 4K TV screens are going to be a big thing.
Well, they're getting even bigger.
Yes. They're getting ginormous, actually.
Yes, they are.
How big?
I meant popular, but yeah, they're huge. They're
in size, well, ranging, and
yeah. Well, the smallest one I've heard about is 50 inches, which is you know, a decent size for a TV. And the largest one, that I've heard about is 120 inches, I think.
Wow,
that is pretty big.
How much would a set like that cost?
A TV set.
Is it a TV, or do you refer to it as a panel?
A panel. Well, that's the thing. I mean, a smart TV isn't really just a TV anymore, is it? It's a, you know, media center, and it's a this and that.
It's
and
a display device that's going to give you a tan.
When they're that size, though, what more? Like, you may as well just fit a mainframe into it, right? Like, it should be the internet right there. You don't need to download anything.
Can you hang it on your wall, or do you have to build the house around the television?
Well, you know what? So we may as well actually talk about it. That Samsung's got a 110-inch 4K HDTV that's finally gone on sale if you've got quite a lot of money.
Yes.
How much money?
I'm glad you asked.
Are you going to tell me?
No, well, actually,
I think we don't have the numbers. It was the price of a small luxury car. So rather a lot. But the big issue is 4K is great. But what content can you buy that displays 4K?
Well, let's talk about 4K. So 4K is twice as high and twice as wide as a full HD TV that you might have now.
In terms of resolution of data.
Yeah, so that makes it four times as big. Mm. And there's not a lot of TV that's being produced that way at the moment, but there are quite a lot of movies. So, for example, you can get The Hobbit, I think, on 4K.
Right.
Because it was actually shot on 4K I think it was the Red camera.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other films.
So in terms of clarity, it would be ultra, ultra sharp.
It would be ridiculously sharp.
Wasn't that one of the criticisms of the last Hobbit movie, that because it was shot in 4K, it was so realistic that props that normally look quite real looked very, very fake, because you could tell they were just props?
Well, I think part of that was also the high frame rate. So you could see The Hobbit in a regular frame rate, which is, you know, approaching 30 for digital projection, I think it is.
30 frames per second, yeah.
Yep. Or 29.8 or something like that. You know, it's an odd number.
What's 0.2 of a frame between friends?
That's right. But you can, in fact, you can go out and see the second installment of that now if you want in ultra high def and in high frame rate as well.
Mm.
And it looks really smooth, like unrealistically smooth.
It's, yeah.
It actually made me feel a little unsettled.
Queasy?
A little bit.
Mm.
Very uncanny.
It's one of those things, right? Like, I'm sure studies, and I've read up on studies, I just can't remember the figures off the top of my head, but it's something around 36 frames per second is what is the highest the human mind can
process. Yeah.
Something in that realm. You're looking at me in a bit of a
inquisitive. So the reason why 30-ish, in fact, I think it can go as low as 24, that the human mind is just interprets that as continuous motion, so you don't see any herky and jerky, but you can obviously tell the difference between these ultra high frame rates.
Yes.
Otherwise, you wouldn't notice it. I mean, people really do. They come out of those films going, wow, what?
Yeah. I guess when it comes to brain function, it's not a threshold, it's not a figure as such that we're capable or incapable of doing. It's just, it's because it's all analog where we shouldn't really think in terms of, you know, 30 or 34. It's not like
the sampling rate of our brains. it's probably more what we're used to as well. I mean, you know, even as far back as, you know, the beginning of motion pictures, you know, people were sitting in cinemas and there was a motion picture of a train and, you know, they jumped up and ran off because it was that realistic. Now, we would laugh at that now.
Yes.
But
which
at
I
the
just
time,
did.
Yes. But at the time, you know, it was just so unusual that you know, that's how people felt.
Yep.
So Samsung's TV, it's 110 inches. There's a few TVs that are about that size now.
Well, this is the thing.
I guess Samsung is the one that I guess everyone keeps an eye on because, you know, the quality of their panels is so good.
Yes. 4K is kind of needed when you start getting to this size, though, right? Because otherwise the pixels would be like 10 centimetres square.
It becomes a little bit like those outside billboards that when you get up close you can see the individual pixels.
Yes.
But when you're standing far enough away, then it looks quite okay.
You wouldn't watch a TV of that size when you're 3 inches away from it with your nose, you know what I mean? I think we've alluded to this a couple of times, our little adventure to the Samsung concept store, where there was a 4K TV there. And at the time, they were just demoing some paintings.
And that was a baby 80-inch one, I think, wasn't it?
It could have been 80, yeah. It was sitting on an easel. It looked pretty good.
It was still pretty big at 80 inches.
Well, that went for $40,000
at
its release, so I don't know what they're going to expect for this 110-inch beast, but you can pretty much bet.
It's always the way, isn't it, as well? The new technology starts off as vastly overpriced versus what they come down to in maybe a year or two's time.
Yeah, and so always early adopters that go in at this stage, the ones with lots of money and
lots of
time to watch.
And a desire to show it off.
Yes.
Yes.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in tech news. Now, also in the the TV front.
Mm. You can now give your television the finger.
The finger.
Really? As we're up to do.
And what will that do for the television?
It will change channels and adjust the volume. It will do some really good things rather than just make you feel better.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Right.
So Samsung again, who have implemented hand-based controls before.
Yep.
And I don't think, you know, there are other manufacturers that are doing it. And really, these handheld hand gestured controls have met different degrees of success. But Samsung are now sort of talking that starting, you know, early this year, they'll be able to use single finger gestures to control volumes and channels and stuff like that.
So that was part of the article. We're not just making that up. We're not just saying single finger.
That's a quote.
No, single finger is correct. Giving your television the finger is perhaps the techno gaze interpretation.
But giving it a finger gesture.
And I guess this is the point that's to be made here, is that it's the resolution of the recognition, the hand gesture recognition is so good that it's able to pick up single fingers now.
Yes.
So perhaps
can it do it consistently?
Well, we hope so.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, the Xbox Kinect system is supposed to be one of, you know, the bomb for that sort of thing.
Yes.
And the thing that it expects is that you actually make not huge gestures, but, you know, when you're scrolling around or whatever, you sort of flap your hands about a bit. You can't just sort of
just do it in
twirl your finger.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive, but perhaps it's sort of a bit of a nuisance as well. A lot of the people that have, especially in Xbox One, you know, talk about how when they're trying to talk to the Xbox or maybe when they're gesturing that it doesn't always pick it up. And I'm not confident that Samsung is necessarily going to improve hugely on that.
See, I begin to wonder whether when these things don't work so well, whether it is the fault of the sensor or whether it is the lack of processing power behind it. Because we've all seen how speech recognition has improved vastly once you get more powerful processors.
Yes. Mm.
And I think the capture devices are probably, you've got enough resolution to do it. It's just that the processing power behind it hasn't been enough in the past. And perhaps Samsung are doing something with some dedicated processing to interpret these gesture controls. Mm. Because I know that, you know, I've got a Leap Motion controller that allows me to wave my hands in front of my computer,
sure.
which is a great toy to play with. And
after looks impressive.
It looks impressive. And guess what? I haven't used it since I've unpacked it.
No.
And had the initial, you know, well, let's see my fingers up on the screen type demonstration. But it's something that, you know, will get better over time. Whether it's good enough to work now, who knows?
Yes.
But, you know, you can imagine yourself sort of waving your finger about and, you know, moving it up to up volume and moving down for down volume and stuff like that. And it would be quite handy, especially if you're always losing your remote control.
Well, that's, I mean, if you're, and I'll freely confess to this, if you've got the remote and it's sitting on the coffee table and you're stretched out on the couch and it's all the way over there and it's like, oh, come on, oh, just wave your finger, that's fine. But, I mean, if it's not that much easier than a remote control, who's going to do it?
No, that's right. And we still want our Star Trek computer where we can say, you know, computer.
Computer.
Turn up the volume, well, please. Play my favourite track.
There's so many options being developed now. They are working on Xbox responds to voice commands. So does Google now. So, you know, it's all happening. It's just which one will win, I think. Which one will be the most
I feel like
used.
Sometimes Samsung likes to jump on the gimmick, like, you know, the curved screen, the, you know, the looking at your eyes to see if it should turn off the display on its
the
phone,
smart
etc.
Watch.
What
a
ridiculous
feature that was.
There are things that are interesting, but... Oh.
Yeah, I turned that off pretty quickly.
We have Thomas from Albert Park has SMS'd in, making the point about, we talked 4K displays before, and making the point that broadcast TV here in Australia is woeful. It's MPEG-4 compression, which doesn't really allow for high resolution. It does allow for high def, but not
the way that the compression works. I mean, you really notice it.
You do,
certainly for sports broadcasts.
Yes.
How it starts to chunk up, and you know, a lot of, but even worse is, you know, non full bandwidth channels like Channel 10, for example, when you have high action stuff, they try to do a lot of action shows.
Yep.
You really notice it when people are moving there as well.
And it's always that, you know, the background colours or whatever just sort of step, you know, in an odd way or whatever. Mm. Was that just DVDs? I can't remember. Which was MPEG-2. But anyway,
it's right to ask why you'd bother spending the money when there's just not the content for it, unless you're a massive film buff and a lot more stuff gets made in 4K, then why bother?
I think this actually points to the delivery mechanism of our entertainment. Is broadcast TV, I think it's dying to a degree, in a sense of, I mean, it's still there and it's still a pretty viable sort of industry, but is it going to continue at the same rate? Are the same ratings going to be obtained from broadcast TV
As in live TV?
Well, yeah, because I guess that's TV, what it boils down
to. Free-to-air TV.
Yeah. Well, even cable. But, I mean, TV as a medium where you sat down at a certain time and watched a show when it was okay for you to do that because the station said so and you absorb all your ads, yes.
Yeah.
TV is a medium, as a storytelling medium, and as a way of, that's going to be around for a long time.
I think as well, digital, like, there is a flexibility in digital TV broadcast. So, you know, channels can be changed relatively easier than what they can when it comes to the old analog service, right? So, and perhaps if new algorithms, new codecs are implemented on the receiver side, you know, technology can be changed at the other end as well. But we could talk for hours on that, I'm sure.
I love to talk about TV.
Talk about TV, talk to TV, talk...
Wave at the TV.
Wave at
the TV
it.
The finger.
Yes. I have to say, actually, very briefly, I watched for the first time The Plan, Battlestar Galactica.
And how was it?
It was awesome. Yeah. I've seen Battlestar Galactica from start to finish.
Mm.
So, like, it's a nice little sort of about face on the
concept. Was this in 4K
there.
Resolution?
Well, it was a Blu-ray
okay.
disc, so I don't think that was 4K though, because I don't think my TV is capable of 4K.
No. But it's still fairly good.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We'll be back with some more tech news, including NSA and their latest revelations.
Get your tinfoil.
That's right. TechnoGaze. Joy 94.9. This is TechnoGaze, where we're covering some of the latest in tech.
We've been talking about TVs and broadcast TV in particular and how that's changing. And of course, a significant milestone that occurred just a couple of weeks ago, in fact, Melbourne.
That's right. So finally, Melbourne is the last region to have switched to completely digital TV. So there's no more analog television signal anywhere in Australia.
Huzzah! Anymore.
It's all done. So all of those get ready ads and stuff that we all saw from the government and stuff like that with the little
gone.
Red lights. It's all done. It's all done. Which is, it's pretty amazing. It's a pretty great achievement.
Hmm. So part of that, though, is because that's now being turned off, there's a whole bunch of bandwidth now available, or airspace, or what's
spectrum.
Spectrum, thank you.
That's right.
That is now made available, and the next step for the government is to be able to sell that spectrum off again as or
for
auction
other
it
things.
Off. I think it already has been auctioned off, the rights to use it, and it's been used for telecommunications-related
some of
stuff.
It, yep, and some of it is radio as well.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Digital radio can be found in close proximity on the spectrum there to some of the TV stuff.
Yep.
Now, the other thing that's going to happen is that there'll be a point where you will need to retune your TV. So each of these regions that have gone up with digital TV, now some of those channels are going to be rearranged to better fit the bandwidth that's there. And in order to do that, you know, they need to actually change some of the signals that your TV signal is being sent out for. So you will have to retune your TV. So the next big push for the government now is not buy your digital TV, because, you know, we should all have done that now. It'll be, here's the date where you must retune your TV in order to keep all the channels you have.
And does this have to be done by people, or can it be pushed out automatically over the airwaves?
No, it can be done by you, though, really, really easily. So, you know, when you buy a TV and you set it up and it says, I'm looking for all my channels now, you can do that yourself.
You just go through that process again.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, which is, I can imagine there'll be a fair amount of confusion with a number of people on what to do and how to do it.
That's right. Now, there is a website that you can check out about the retune date. So if you go to Digital Ready. .gov.au.
Yes.
It gives you lots of, you know, there's some pretty fireworks and celebratory things about how we're all on digital now, but it will tell you all about what it is that you need to do to retune your TV.
So I imagine if you don't retune, then you will lose some of the channels.
You may lose some of the channels, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And it
really is coming to the point now where the usability of your TV is more important, right? It's not like you just set and forget and it just sits there in the corner and you press it and it does what it does as it's always done. It's going to be a bit more of an interaction with it, I guess, from a long-term maintenance point of view.
Yeah, that's right. It's I mean, you can't just sort of, you know, tune to, say, channel 2 to get the ABC anymore. You know, you kind of have to know how that works. And something that probably wasn't always a huge, it's like you say about the usability, I would say that it's probably not a huge part of people's thought processes until they actually sit down and think about it is, well, you know, is this TV actually a real pain in the bum to use or not?
Yes. Yes.
You know,
and suddenly, the more emphasis will be given, or the better the interaction, the more it will sell.
Yeah, and as the user interface gets more complex, and if you have different brands of TV in your house, you're going to suddenly notice these differences.
True.
So unless all the TV manufacturers get together and say, okay, this is going to be a common user interface that we're going to implement.
Not going to happen.
No, not quickly. Then the chances are you're probably going to become more brand loyal. So you'll have brand A throughout your house or brand B throughout your house, because this way I know they all operate the same.
Well, of course. I mean, if you buy an LG TV with an LG soundbar with an LG woofer or whatever like that, then, you know, they all work together. They probably use the same remote, etc.
And I'll have in the bedroom another LG TV for the same reason.
Why wouldn't you?
They may also interact with each other too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
welcome to 1984. And the fridge.
And
you
the fridge.
Must have an internet-connected fridge.
How else will you know to buy milk?
The fridge locks automatically. You last fed 30 minutes ago, Michael. You don't need any more.
I need that.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9.
Talking
about tech. Rainer, Michael, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pointing to people. I don't know why I'm doing that.
We know who you are.
Really?
Yes.
In other news over the course of the Christmas break, a guy by the name of Jacob Applebaum, along with renowned German publication Der Spiegel. I just wanted to be able to say that name, Der Spiegel.
Der
Spiegel.
Go on.
The Mirror.
Yeah, well, yes. And so they've been busy releasing redacted information, leaked information from the NSA. Of course, this goes back to Snowden and his leaks, and some further documentation that's come to light around the technology that the NSA are using to breach the security of other people and organisations and governments.
Mm.
It's an interesting... So he's actually done a speech on this. It was at a conference that occurred over the holiday season.
Germany.
Yep. And some of the sort of key points that I noticed from it were more around what this actually means for government. So this guy Jacob Applebaum is a bit of a nerd. Like you look at him and he's
been active in the whole internet security thing for years and years now.
Mm. But he's also a journalist, right? He's taken on that sort of journalist moniker, and I guess you'd need to when you're dealing with this type of information and making sure that you're legitimately covering what needs to be covered. Mm. Now he actually some of the things he made the point around was that the laws around publishing confidential information as what he's doing are in fact they're in favour of an oppressor who is criminal. So talking about perhaps governments that suggesting that they may be criminal in their intent or their actions perhaps.
Mm.
And that the laws, in fact, favour that side of things, which is an interesting sort of concept that has kind of been an undercurrent amongst all the NSA leaking stuff that's going on, but it hasn't really been made a big deal by anyone. So it's interesting that he's kind of coming to those conclusions.
Well, it's interesting you say that. He just last month. You talk about criminal activities and things. He actually told another a German publication that he thought that he was under surveillance and that someone had entered his house and started using his computer.
Mm.
Now, if there's anyone who would be a good target for that sort of thing and isn't, already far, far away, like Julian Assange, say, or Edward Snowden, both of whom are, constantly around other people, if there's anyone who'd know that that sort of stuff is going on, surely it'd be him because he's had so much involvement in all those organisations, WikiLeaks, Cult of the Dead Cow, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, this is a guy along with publications like Der Spiegel, are collating all this information and ensuring that it's fit for public consumption. So one of the biggest criticisms, I guess, of Julian Assange's WikiLeaks thing that occurred years back was, information was released with names and so forth included. So there's a lot of care being taken ever since that initial sort of stuff that went on to ensure that names are redacted.
Right.
That personal information is removed. And he even went as far as to say, okay, it was an interesting moral dilemma that they took themselves through whether to name the people that are the victims, that are identified victims of this surveillance, and he very clearly apologised to anyone who might be viewing the presentation or that might be aware of what's going on, if it does become apparent that they themselves were part of this surveillance mechanism, then he apologised that he couldn't name them for reasons that he wants to be able to continue doing what they're doing.
It's a bit of a maturing of the press, I think, in handling this type of data and this type of information, whereas in the past, perhaps they just published everything willy-nilly, and now they're actually going through it, they're curating it, they're, like you said, redacting names. And
part of it's a risk reduction thing for them as well. They aren't going to cop quite as much heat from governments going, you're a traitor and a this and a that. Mm. If they can cover their own bums and make it quite clear.
Isn't it interesting that there's this long talk about the press industry, dying and not being relevant anymore, being taken over by bloggers and so forth. And yet here's a lovely new skill set that people need to obtain in order to become a quote journalist unquote, which is how to deal with top secret information and confidential information
and
all the ethics around it. And that's I'm sure in the media profession that's always been there, but it's suddenly so front and centre and it's part of the news is in fact the ethics around it and so forth.
And you can't just learn that stuff from having a computer and a blog, and like everyone sort of goes, the revolution, blah, 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 the media, blah, blah, blah. Like anyone can do that stuff. Well, yes, but can everyone do it well? The answer is no, they can't.
No, that's right. And there's a long standard of a practice within journalism of how you do things.
Yep.
And it's been built up over time. And the blogosphere certainly misses out on that.
It, not all the time. There are obviously bloggers that can do that, but you can't. You aren't on the equal footing of a practiced, considerate journalist just because you happen to be able to string words together on a keyboard.
Yes.
Now, here's something interesting as well that came out of those documents that that Applebaum released.
Mm. Well, actually, it should be mentioned, and he was very quick to talk about this as well. Der Spiegel were the ones who released them that morning. He was simply talking to them after the fact. And I think that's, again, from a legal point of view, there's a reason for that. But, go on.
Either way. So the allegation is that lots of smartphones, including the ever popular Apple iPhone, can have some creepy backdoors in any of those products.
I watched the 1 hour presentation he made, and it was almost suggested that he the iOS platform actually he didn't say it outright, but there was almost like Apple complied with the NSA to ensure that there was the possibility of backdooring it.
Yep.
The other point, though, on the flip side of that is that at the time these documents were written, was at a time when Apple's iOS wasn't particularly secure. It didn't have encryption across the board.
It was some years ago. It was well before iOS 5 even.
Yes.
Apparently. So
indeed. So perhaps that's one reason. But the implication there was that I think the actual words he used were that were used in the NSA documentation. In fact, were if you're trying to attack an iPhone, it's possible, regardless.
Yes, right.
No matter what OS, what type of phone, etc., it's all just you can hack it at the flick of a switch, sort of thing. So,
that's right.
Whereas all the other phones, it was sort of like, oh, you need to use this backdoor for this one and that backdoor for that one.
And Apple actually made the time to put out a statement quickly that said,
we've
never worked with the NSA to create a backdoor in any of our products. We're unaware of this program.
Did they say that?
Here's the statement. The full statement is found in a few places, but I'm reading it off allthingsd.com. Has a copy of it.
Yes.
The exact words are, they've never done this, they've never heard of it, etc. We'll continue to use our resources to stay ahead of malicious hackers and defend our customers from security attacks, regardless of who's behind
malicious
them.
Hackers?
What? Is the NSA considered a malicious hacker, or are they just a hacker?
If you listen to Jacob Applebaum, yes, maybe they are.
But to me, it's a bit like Monica Lewinsky. I did not have sexual relations. Well, what's your definition of sexual relations?
Well, I don't know, but it's pretty hard to find any ambiguity. And Apple has never worked with the NSA to create a backdoor in any of our products.
Look, I must say,
doth protest too much. Like, they're being pretty clear.
One of the good things about Apple and iOS is their consistency. So perhaps because of that consistency across their product range, if you can find a way in, then you can always get in. Whereas if you're looking at, there are different flavors of Android, and this manufacturer does that. So
there's consistency.
Yeah, so perhaps it's the consistency, which is the strength of the Apple brand, that's really allowing these backdoor things to happen. Because once you're in, that's it. You're in.
True. Now, it's from the slides, it also says that you do need to actually be present and have the phone in your possession in order to get this sort of thing working. So it's not like they can just sort of, drop it in
over the airwaves.
They might try to later, but according to these slides, no, it's not something that you can just sort of drop in with your latest iOS update or anything.
I've been watching this fantastic show called it's clearly the holiday season, because I've been watching a lot of TV, right? Person of Interest.
How good is Person of Interest?
And it's just at any drop of a hat, no matter what the phone is, they can always silently pair with the phone of the target.
And remember, this is a show where they have somehow got access to absolutely every security camera anywhere in the world.
It's a future, Raina. You've got to come to the terms with this, right? It's like every webcam out there is going to have security vulnerabilities. And this, so going back to the Applebaum thing, one of the other points he made was the NSA is a government organisation. They are actively hoarding information about the vulnerabilities in hardware platforms across the board, including a whole bunch of US-based companies. You'd think that a government organisation's best interest, or the government in general, their best interest is in keeping the hardware and software that's deployed in their own government organisations and elsewhere secure, ensuring that that's the case. But here is a government organisation obtaining information about what vulnerabilities are available, implementing software to take advantage of those vulnerabilities and not releasing any of that information to the public. what does that say about the state of the US, you know, system and the security of US-based services?
Like, yeah, and I read a great article by Michael Deering, who is, you know, a fairly well-known commentator and a venture capitalist, and he refers to it as it being like the dolphin in the tuna net.
Mm.
So, you know, there's so much damage being done to the industry, to the community, to everything,
yes.
just in them trying to catch, you know, bad guys, which
yep.
is admirable. Just like we want to catch tuna because it's tasty, but we don't want to, you know,
kill
destroy.
The dolphins.
We don't want to kill the dolphins at the same time. That's right.
Yeah,
you don't want to do it at any cost necessarily.
No, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah. This is Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9. Wow, we could go to town on that topic. I'm sure
we have.
Way over time. We'll be back with more, including some back to local stuff, the Australian privacy rules that are coming into place in March. We'll talk about that in a few moments.
Technogiz.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Yes, that's right. This is Joy 94.9. This is Technogiz, where we cover some of the latest in tech. And we're talking through privacy now.
Yes.
The Australian privacy, there's some rules that are coming into place, or new act, I think is.
That's right. So if you do any sort of work with people's personal information, or if you have a website or anything like that, then you would hopefully be aware of the national privacy principles which govern, you know, what you can do with people's personal information. In fact, not just websites, but a lot of other things. But I mean, all three of us in this studio do quite a lot of work with, you know, people's, you know, customer data and,
yep.
and stuff like that in our day-to-day lives.
Yes.
So it's hopefully something that we're all familiar with, even if we don't quite remember the name of it. But what's happening in March is that the new version of that will be coming into place. So they've changed their name to the Australian Privacy Principles, which is fair enough. And they cover organisations with more than $3 million turnover, healthcare providers, government, education, things like that, and talk about, you know, what it is that you're allowed to do with people's information and how careful you need to be with it.
Right. So, and I think via The Conversation, which is sort of an upcoming publication based here in Australia.
That's right.
Seems to be a good answer to the major media outlets that exist today, in that they are going to keep their content free.
It is. It's all academia all the time, but more with a journalistic sort of bent. And some writers from the University of Canberra, from the Centre of Internet Safety, have contributed to an article about that. So Nigel Fair, who's the director there. And what he's covering off on is talking about some of the different ways in which Australian organisations may or may not already be prepared for those principles. And they've come up with a really great report, which you can read. It's quite an easy read. It doesn't take too long. About, you know, what sort of organisations are doing the best at it, and maybe what organisations could be doing better. Things like, you know, is their privacy policy matching what they say they're going to do? Does their privacy policy have something stupid in it, like, you know, the laws of California or whatever, which make no sense in Australia? Are they setting cookies? Are they using those social tracker things and stuff? So anyone who's a regular listener of this show will know that we talk a lot about those sorts of things, you know, things like cookies, bits and pieces that are embedded in websites and stuff. It should be no great surprise that in the report they've discovered that government websites do a pretty good job of not being very intrusive with their cookies and things like that, but maybe they are not as good at sticking with their stated privacy intentions.
Right.
And for a bit of Victorian pride here, we can say that the Victorian government came out best in their report, which
Huzzah.
Is pretty great. But thinking about online commerce and things like that, I don't know if you've ever used Alibaba.com, for example, but they set quite a lot of cookies.
Right.
Bricks and clicks they've got here as a category for places like Harvey Norman, JB or whatever. Quite a lot of them obviously are very interested in tracking where you're going and what you're interested in, and maybe are not maybe have some room for improvement there as regards the privacy principles. So it's a pretty good read. Interesting to see who's doing what.
The good thing about these new privacy principles, as opposed to the current ones, this one's not a toothless tiger. that there are actual fines that the commissioner can impose.
Yes, that is one of the most interesting things about these, is that they can actually start enforcing it.
Yeah.
So suddenly breaches of our privacy will perhaps result in something that
So rather than just a rap over the knuckles, it's like you need to pay over some money.
I wonder if jurisdiction's going to be a problem though for that. Like, is it companies based here in Australia? What if they have a Cayman Islands thing that runs their website and therefore they're exempt or something like that?
I'm sure that things will get messy, but by and large, for Australian companies that operate, you know, onshore...
Mm-hmm. And have a registered business address.
Yes, and so,
mainly.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I know with my own organisation, we are going through compulsory privacy training for these new laws that everybody has to attend. It's a 1.5-hour session to understand them and understand what the impact is. And that's got to be good, because it's the first time, you know, that I know of that we've ever done something like this.
Hmm. It's good news, though. I mean, it's good for the consumer, right?
It can only be good for everybody.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah. Now, also in sort of happier news, on the lighter side...
on the positive side.
An entrepreneur from San Francisco has been credited to lift 15,000 young people over the poverty line via a sort of a system a business that she's developed.
Yeah, and when I first read this, I was a little bit wary over what she was doing, because she's basically gone out to Africa and essentially outsourcing offshoring work from the United States to people in Africa. And the first thing I thought about was, you know...
Ooh, a bit of offshore, yeah.
Yeah, and exploitation and stuff like that. But, you know, she's running a not-for-profit organisation, and what she's doing is she's finding people, skilling them up, so giving them training on how to... use certain tools, whether it be video editing or Photoshop or those type of things, finding work back in America and acting as a broker in between the two and paying a fair wage to these people.
Right. So it is offshoring to a degree.
It is. It's totally offshoring.
But it's also that aspect of like teaching a man to fish, right? Or teaching a person to fish
rather than giving them the fish. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that is interesting is that, as well, because it's a non-profit, they're reinvesting quite a lot of their profits into improving it. So at least 40% of their revenue has to go back into training and salaries and community programs and stuff like that, rather than just lining some Silicon Valley venture capitalist pockets, is pretty good.
Yeah, and it's called Semasource.
Yeah.
And, the stats they're quoting is that they've helped lift over 15,000 people above the poverty line, and 92% of those people who have been helped have moved into high-paying work or higher education.
Mm.
So it definitely is that teaching a person to fish sort of mentality, which is probably a good thing, needs to be, as the world sort of equalises itself in terms of skill and monetary value, perhaps... these are the types of things that will help do it.
That's right. And, I mean, if you were a little bit concerned that maybe... because, I mean, something that I personally have a lot of conflict in myself with about outsourcing, I know that it obviously makes sense and a lot of good work can be done, but there are people back home who are also unemployed.
Yes.
But this model now is coming up in a different program called SAMI USA. So that will be working with college students, community college students in the US, you know, and...
try and upskill them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So things like Odesk and Elance, they're sort of introducing them to those and getting them in there.
Mm.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's nice to see technology used in a positive way like this, rather than either exploiting somebody or used to spy on them.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. But certainly in terms of employment and labour and stuff, it's really good to see that actually works in a positive way, rather than, again, it's just like, oh, let's get some people from Africa to do it for 20 cents an hour or whatever, you know, which is, you know...
Where you get factories collapsing and so forth. People.
Yeah, you get a lot of fawning sort of articles going, so-and-so is such a great entrepreneur because they connect, you know, people in the West with people in Romania and stuff like that. Well,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but who is it serving?
Indeed, this is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're almost at the end of the hour. It's time has flown, as it always does on the show here. We'll be back with a wrap-up of the show in a few moments.
Technogaze.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology and gazing into the world of technology, in fact.
And donning our tinfoil hats.
We're taking them off now, though.
Mm.
Since we need to return to the real world and function as a human being.
What an odd way to put it.
I've moved into an introverted state over the last 7 days. Very much at home. Very much spending a lot of time in front of the TV.
Having a bit of a staycation.
Yes. Junk food is my friend. We've almost run out of time, haven't we? So what's...
We're talking about pigeons.
We did promise to tell you about the pigeons, didn't we?
Don't forget the pigeons.
Yes, and how to avoid, government surveillance by using carrier pigeons?
Yeah, now there's been a long-running joke in the industry. And in fact, there was an entire... a standard written around TCP/IP by
what there's an RFC for
for data transport via carrier pigeon
for the implementation. That's very funny.
And you laugh, but there are people who are seriously looking at it to avoid government surveillance because you really can't wiretap a pigeon.
Are these specially bred pigeons, or are they just common garden variety homing pigeons?
Homing pigeons are specially bred, aren't they, and trained and stuff. But imagine that. So you can load up all your secret trove of documents, if you're the next Edward Snowden, onto a pigeon, or indeed a number of pigeons, just for redundancy, and achieve some fantastic data throughput, because you can put scads of data. I can't download gigs and gigs and gigs of data any faster than a pigeon can fly across town.
Yes.
Bad luck if you move home. Your pigeon won't be able to follow you.
Keeping it private, though, through pigeon. Excellent idea. You'd have to have some way of ensuring whether or not it's been opened or not, whether the CDs have been read. So I'd have to implement some sort of...
How big are these pigeons if you expect them to carry CDs? You know, I thought they had little scrolls of paper wrapped around their tiny, eeny-weeny legs instead of, you know, now we've got CDs.
Yes. We really have to wrap up the show. We're eating into Pete's time with cravings.
Oh, can't wait.
Indeed. So get your appetites ready for Pete's latest rendition of cravings.
Yum, yum.
I've been Mark...
You're still Mark.
I'm
always Raina.
And I'm still Michael.
Been listening to Technogaze. If you want to catch up with previous episodes or peruse maybe what you've missed today, you can do so by jumping onto joy.org.au/technogaze. Stay tuned for Pete. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.